seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It is sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny
it's just
day.
A sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open. You can also text us at 57500. It's time to start planting those cool season vegetables, and we wanted to start out the top of the hour and talk about some things that you can plant right now that you can put out in your vegetable garden come what, middle of May?
It depends on what you're planting.
Okay, so what should we be planting now? What
and
can
so
we plant now for
it's
indoors?
It's still a little early, but if you can work your soil, the first thing I would do is go out and make some furrows, and you're going to be planting on top of the furrow, or sometimes we call it a hill, and you make those furrows and just let them stay for a week or so, because the furrows will heat up more than just flat ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it so you can plant a little sooner. But depending on the weather and the soil temperatures, you want to be at least 40 or 45 degrees, 50 is even better. You can use a kitchen thermometer, just stick it in the soil and see what it reads. But when you reach that point and the weather, we don't have a foot of snow coming in, or, you know, temperatures in the teens, then you can go ahead and plant. And so starting in mid-March to late March, early April, radishes, onions, peas, spinach, turnips are all things that we can put in. And then if you're doing plants, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, again, turnips, asparagus, artichokes, and cabbage would go in about the same time.
Okay, can these go outside right now, or would they be planting those inside first?
Well, if you're doing seeds, that's the first point that you would want to do it. But if you're doing starts, then they should have been started, depending on what it is, a couple of weeks ago. But they sure can do some starts that will go out anywhere to 3 to 4 weeks. And so broccoli, cauliflower, the turnips here, I haven't eaten a lot of turnips to know if you even like them or not. But, you know, if you wanted to, you could start them and then just put them out in late March or early April, which is totally fine.
Mm-hmm. So what should they be starting indoors right now?
Indoors, anything like the broccoli or cauliflower can be started now. Lettuce can be started now. If you like other greens, I'm a fan of mustard greens, which have that kind of mustardy sharp. It doesn't taste like a sandwich mustard, but if you've ever had mustard greens, they just have an initial sharp flavor to them, and then it kind of calms down. I like just a few of them in salads and things, but mustard greens can be started now. Those are going to be the main things that you would start. Cabbage, if you want to.
For those folks who do want to start, you know, planting indoors, what's your best advice as to things like soil? And is it better to buy some of the kits that, you know, actually have the kind of dome that goes over them?
It is. Some of the Steve Regan stores and maybe IFA will sell individual flats and pony packs that you can, if you say last year you went and bought a kit, but you use the pony packs out of it, you can buy new inserts for them from local retailers and usually just buy one. The thing that I would look at too is that you can buy these kits to where you can start one plant or six plants or 12 plants. And so there's several sizes. If you can't find them locally, Amazon has a multitude of options. I just bought to start, I want to try playing around with watermelons and cucumbers and a few things, but I bought some 3-inch tall pots that are deeper that have individual domes for.
Oh,
and so
okay.
I'm going to play with those a little bit, but you can find almost anything. I don't dare use Temu because once you download that app, I think it takes over your phone and tracks everything you do. Hmm. I sound like Conspiracy Dave, but
it's not your favorite.
Temu. But if you order from Temu, it's amazing what Temu has as far as pots and things for starting plants too. I always look at their website in an incognito browser, but anyway, there are lots of options out there that you can get almost anything. You can recycle if you eat salads from their local grocery store that come in a clamshell. You can actually use those to start seeds. You just put seed starting mix in, use a ruler or something similar to put some channels, just shallow channels in the soil so you know where to put your seeds, tag where you've planted, and then when they come up and start to get a couple of true leaves. And so they'll come up with a couple seed leaves and then they'll grow a little bit. When you start seeing true leaves, you carefully lift them out of the soil and transplant them into containers so that you can later plant them in the garden.
How do you feel about those more biodegradable pots?
They're fine. They are not super biodegradable here quickly as they're intended to be. And so the pots I ordered for the cucumbers and melons are biodegradable. And the reason I ordered them is because cucumbers and melons hate to have their roots disturbed. And so what I'll do is when I'm ready to plant is I will use a razor blade to slit the sides of those biodegradable containers. And then I'll cut the lip off so that it's flush with the ground and the roots will grow through the slits I made in the pot. I might even cut the bottom off. Mm-hmm. But they're fine and they will decompose. But just to put the plant in the soil without cutting the pot up a little bit, it will root bound the plant. The plant will become root bound before it can punch through because the pot stays too solid.
You mentioned seed starting soil. All potting soils are not made the same.
They're not. A lot of them, especially the less expensive ones, can be pretty coarse where they have a lot of shredded bark or ground up bark in them. And they're sometimes too coarse to start fine seeds. And so there are specialty mixes called seed starting mix, or they might even say seed and plug mix, but they grind the components more finely so that they hold more water. So they have a higher water holding capacity. So you don't need to water quite as often, but because they're ground more finely, they're just much easier to work with when you're starting small seeds. Now, if you're starting larger seeds, you know, such as marigolds, or not that you would start beans and peas, but seeds of that size, pumpkins and things like that, the regular potting mix is fine. But for the smaller seeds, those seed starting mixes are so good.
Okay, but water and light are going to be crucial if you're starting these things indoors. Let's give them a couple of quick tips before we take a break.
So they want a good light source. A south window sometimes isn't enough. And so if you can make a basic wooden frame or PVC frame and suspend shop lights from it, from chain, so that you can move the shop lights up and down, you'd keep those shop lights on for 12 to 14 hours a day. And you can turn them off at night, but that will give them supplemental lighting so that your plants are healthy. The other thing is never use your native soil from your garden to start seeds. And then when you're watering, the seeds need to be kept quite moist. You cover them with the domes to keep them at 100% humidity. But when the seeds start to germinate, pull the domes off and start to dry the soil out, because what was good for the seed isn't good for the seedling, and it can cause some rot issues and things. And so they need to start to dry out after they start to germinate.
All right. I love the article that we put up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page because it talks about the crop, how long from time from seed to transplant, and when it's safe to set out in the garden. It's awesome.
Yes. And I've had Michelle put up a supplemental article that USU put together. And the only reason I'm using the supplement is that it's a little more thorough on the amount or the kinds of crops that you can put out and when. And so it has more suggestions than the other one, but the other one has much more information on getting them started and preparing to plant.
All right. We're going to take your calls, questions coming up next. The phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. Text us 57500. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning, taking your calls, and the phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. Ton, next listener would like to know, how soon can they plant with their walls of water?
You generally can plant about 2 weeks ahead of when you normally would. And so if you were putting out cool season crops, and let's say you started broccoli and cauliflower and a few other things, then you could cover those with a wall of water about 2 weeks ahead.
Okay. Next listener, I think, wants you to take sides on this. So, is the IFA lawn step program better for Utah lawns than the Scott lawn program?
When you break down what the components of each are, they're the same.
Okay.
And it's just which one you prefer. Scott's is generally more expensive, but they put more technology into their fertilizer blends to where every prill, and that's just a fertilizer particle, has all the nutrients in every prill. So you get a little bit more even spread. But either way, it's just whatever one you want to use. You know, a local garden center says, well, we're formulating these for Utah soils. But if you look at their formulations as compared to Scott's, they're not much different. They're going to be a lot of nitrogen and then a little bit of phosphorus and a little bit of potassium, or no phosphorus and a little bit of potassium. And so, you know, my advice is to get a soil test done to see if your soil is short in phosphorus or potassium. If it's not, then you can generally get away with something like 2000 or 4200. There's a few blends out there that have solar release fertilizer in them, but it all depends on the nutrient levels in your soil.
All right. Next listener wants to know, what is the best procedure to use eggshells around their plants?
To not.
Yeah, why would? Well, I know that it's out there.
Eggs are calcium carbonate. Our soil is up to 1/3 calcium carbonate. We don't need to add any more. And the calcium in those eggshells is in a form that is not available to your plants. And so when you go to these, like these lovey-dovey, feel-good gardening sites that are, oh, I mixed up some love with this manure tea, and then we, you know, let it sit for 3 days under loving light and everything. You know, if you look at the science behind it, eggshells are not benefiting anything, especially in Utah soils. And don't add more calcium to your soil. There's already plenty there. And so I don't mean to sound harsh, and I apologize, but we just don't need eggshells in our soil.
All right. Next listener wants to know, is now a good time to move a peach tree to a different location?
If you can dig, yes, it is.
Next person would like to know, they have flowering plum tree that now grows fruit and makes a mess on the driveway and sidewalk. Can they prevent pollination somehow?
Not really. You can try using a product called Florel Growth Regulator that, if you spray it at the right time, will knock the blossoms off sooner. And it's hit and miss. You know, it's going to be influenced by the temperature, and you need to spray at peak bloom or maybe just before peak bloom and follow the instructions exactly. But whenever you get into these growth regulators, it takes following the label exactly and just a little bit of luck. And so they can maybe reduce the numbers, but you know, I suspect that it's probably a redly flowering plum like Newport. Those plums are actually edible, and I know a lot of people that turn them into jams and jellies and fruit leather. And so, I mean, that is an option, so you would have to pick them, but they are a very edible plum.
All right. Joanne is on the line in Bountiful. Good morning, Joanne. What was your question?
Good morning. We live above the Bountiful Bench, and on the north and west sides, we still have a considerable snow. But on the south side, the bulbs have started just breaking through the ground. My question is it too early for me to go out and broadcast wildflower seeds in the yard in the sunny parts?
No, you can, and it'll just come up when it wants to.
When it wants to,
yeah.
And it's not too early for me to go out and plant peas and the vegetables in the garden?
Peas, yes. Other vegetables, I would wait.
Okay, that's a very simple answer. Thank you very much, and
right.
Have a good day.
You too. Thanks, Joanne, for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, how do you start sunchokes and where do you get them? And first of all, what are they?
Sunchokes are a root crop that are in the daisy family and they look like a sunflower.
Okay.
So they grow 6 or 8 feet tall and they have a sunflower on top of them. They're quite pretty.
Okay.
They are quite aggressive and so you need a contained space. But when you dig them, the roots are flavored like an artichoke. And so they are used in... for health, because the way they store their energy is we can't really digest it very well. And so if you want a filling but low calorie food, you know, you don't just want to eat the sunchokes, but you can put them in salads and do different things with them. They won't raise your glycemic index up if you're diabetic and they're really low calorie, but they taste good. And so people will grow them for that benefit. But once you get some starts, you've got them and they just spread and you have to work to keep them contained a little bit. And so I like to grow them. What I might do is get a 5 gallon bucket, cut the bottom off and bury the bucket in the ground and fill it with soil and put the sunchokes in there. And you know, something similar, or if you have a contained space, but you can order them online. I'm sure if they got a hold some of the Facebook gardening groups, Utah Gardeners, Utah Gardening Experts. There's some trade. I can't remember the name of them all, but there are a couple out there that people just trade and sell plants. You can find them locally or online.
I think the favorite question of the morning is pruning roses. I think we've had now 6 different people
mid-March.
Asking. And people are, and they're just starting to wake up. So, yes, you can prune them. You can start now.
You can start now.
Okay. Prune those roses. And again, just give the quick basics.
Just 3 to 5 main canes, if they're the hybrid teas, and prune them between about shin and knee height.
All right. We're going to take a break. Come back with your calls and questions. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. Text us 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your questions at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. And our phone lines are open right now. We have a couple of questions about raspberries this morning, Ton. The first person would like to know, they're planning to put raspberries in their garden this spring, and they want to know if they know that they are kind of invasive. So they're wondering if they should put some sort of vertical root barrier between them and the rest of the garden. And then what do you suggest using?
I would suggest giving them space. You know, if you have the room, don't try to grow things 2 or 3 feet away from them. You know, you're going to need room to walk and pick, and the raspberries are going to need room to grow. And so you generally maintain raspberries on about a 2 to maybe 3 foot wide row. And you can use a rototiller or just clip them. You don't want to rototill too often, but you actually rototill the sides of the row to keep them in check so that they don't spread everywhere. And so just make sure that you have space on either side. USU has some great raspberry fact sheets. Sheridan Hansen and Brent Black and I think Mike Pace all worked on care and varieties.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would look at those and grow them accordingly. If you need dwarf raspberries, and I use that in air quotes, there are some bush form raspberries out there that don't spread nearly as quickly. You know, you can get a bowl full when they're ripened for a few weeks. They're not going to be super productive, but they are out there. But I would look at giving them the space.
Okay, next person would like to know, they want to move some 5-year-old raspberries. They want to move them to the other side of their yard, and they're wondering when the best time to do that is.
They could dig them within the next 2 or 3 weeks, but I am cautious because when your raspberries are getting 5 or 10 years old, they get a slow buildup of viruses, and sometimes these viruses aren't visible. But especially at the 10-year mark, you oftentimes just see a slow decline in production. And so I hesitate to move them. You know, they can if they've been productive and they'll get another 5 or 10 years out of them. But I would also consider maybe looking at purchasing new starts and getting them so that they're certified virus free. know, there's websites like Norse Farms, and it's N-O-U-R-S-E, Norse Farms, that they're very reliable and they have dozens of varieties. And I would just go that direction.
All right. Next person says their blackberry bushes did not produce very sweet berries last summer. What are some things that maybe they could do to improve the sweetness this year?
Leave them on the plant longer. They look ripe and they're still really tart.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to leave them on for another 3 or 4 or 5 days. You don't want them mushy and you don't want the bees in there, you know, sucking the juice out. But a big mistake a lot of locals make is picking the raspberries when they look ripe, but they're still really tart. And if you leave them on a little longer, they will hold and they sweeten up quite a bit. And so Triple Crown, a lot of the varieties named after Native American tribes, such as Arapaho or Navajo, will do well here. And so I just leave them on a little longer and see if that helps. Now, you can get off flavors if they're drought stressed. And so I would water them to a depth of at least a foot weekly through the growing season to make sure that they have enough water.
Could it be warmer temperatures are impacting them?
Maybe, but if they're watered correctly and left on, I mean, my check against that is if the commercial growers are getting good quality fruit when we've experienced multiple 100-degree days,
mm-hmm.
and the homeowners are not, that leads you back to a management practice that is off somewhere where they're not watered frequently enough, or, you know, something else is going on. If the commercial growers who do this for a living have bad fruit, then it's the weather. If their fruit is good and the homeowners are having problems, it's just that we probably need to read up a little more and maybe pay a little bit more attention. And I have these same problems because it's still possible to get good fruit with the warmer temperatures.
Okay. Next listener is listening in Clinton, and they have white tree wraps on their young trees, and they're wondering when they should take those off.
Oh, late March, early April is soon enough.
Okay. They're also wondering, they're looking for an evergreen tree that can handle full sun, drought stress, grows up to 8 feet wide and does not need to be wrapped in the winter. Do you have any recommendations?
No. Any evergreen. I mean, maybe columnar Scotch pine. You know, that has a lot of problems with pine needle scale. And it would need to be treated every few years, maybe. But anything needled evergreen, they are going to split out. Maybe some of the spruce. There are some columnar spruce out there that might work. They still can split a little bit, but I just, because of her snow, I get hesitant when people say I need something that doesn't split. You know, in the Portland and Seattle areas, you're fine because it rains and they just slough that off and it doesn't cause a problem. And if we start having warmer winters, it's going to be less of a problem here. But the junipers, you know, like Taylor juniper, Skyrocket, and the arborvita that are narrow, to keep them from splitting out, they're just going to have to be wrapped.
All right. Next listener would like to know what you think of growing little fruit trees.
There's a book called Grow a Little Fruit Tree. And there is a horticulturist and designer named Lee Nelson Hokey that we've had on a few times that teaches the grow a little fruit tree method. But Mike Caron reviewed the book a couple of weeks ago and actually said, you know, this has sound scientific principles and I wouldn't hesitate. And so with Malie and Mike's stamps of approval, that's a book they can look at.
Next listener would like to know how, when, and how should they prune or trim their forsythia?
When and how? After it's done blooming, and I would use renewal pruning to where they're taking the biggest branches out from the base, take about 20 to 25% of those big branches out, and then give it a light haircut just to keep it sized down. And they will do this every year so that there are no branches in the forsythia older than 5 years old.
Okay, next listener wants to know if they've waited too long to apply the dormant oil spray to peach, apricot, and cherry trees.
So you need to subscribe to the USU Pest Lab updates. They're free. We don't share email. You don't get advertisements, but just do a Google search of USU Pest Lab subscription or USU Pest Lab update subscription. It'll bring you to the page, choose the ones you want, and they will tell you down to the day when you need to spray.
Next person would like to know, can candy tuft be divided? And if so, how do you do that?
You would divide it in the fall, and it eventually will come up with multiple crowns that are growing from when I say a central point, in a circle, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And after 3 or 4 years, you would just split it with a sharp shovel.
Like in half?
In half or thirds. Mm-hmm. And just make sure you have 1 or 2 crowns per start and transplant in a new area in the fall.
Okay. We're going to take a break, come back with more of your calls and questions. Phone lines are open. You can call us right now at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse, spending your Saturday morning with us. You can call us now. The phone lines are open at 801-575-8255 or text us your questions, 57500. Next listener, Ton, says, last year, all of their potatoes were green, even those deep in the ground. How can they prevent that? Can they prevent that?
Usually, if they're turning green, they were exposed to sunlight somehow. And if the other possibility is if they were left, because the green is actually chlorophyll that's being produced in preparation to sprout. And so I don't know why they would have turned green underground. I'm not aware of any conditions, but they do it when they've been exposed to light.
Okay. So there's nothing that they can really do?
No. And what they could try doing, though, is those potatoes grow. If they follow the fact sheets, you let the potato grow to 1 foot tall, and then you pile 6 inches of soil at the base, and you're growing these on a hill. And then you let them grow another foot, and then you pile another 6 inches of soil up on the sides. And you can cover this with grass clippings or a compost or something just to keep the water in the soil a little better. But I might consider, as they're growing the potatoes, following that method, but maybe especially when they're producing the potatoes, to cover that up with some mulch or grass clippings to see if that helps.
Okay, next listener wants to move some columbine. They want to know when they can do that. But before you answer that question, the reason they're asking this question is because they have tons of grass in their flower garden. So now their option is that they're going to move the columbine so that they can try to get that grass out.
The sooner the better. Because they're spring blooming, you would generally move them in the fall. But if they need to move them, I would go ahead and do it so that they can take care of the grass problems.
Okay. And then once they get the columbine out of there, what is their best option for getting rid of that grass?
There's a few things they can try doing. They can cover with enough mulch that the grass doesn't grow up through it, 5 or 6 inches, and leave it for several months. And then they would take that off and then go ahead and replant, because the grass will be dead. Or they can use something like glyphosate.
That works? Like 5 or 6 inches of mulch?
It does. The only thing that grows up through that is maybe bindweed, but it's usually growing in from the side and up and not directly up through.
Okay, so maybe give up the flowers for this year and just...
Yeah, I mean, if the grass is... So a lot of times the grass greens up sooner than a lot of the perennials. Mm-hmm. And they could maybe spray it out like that, but there's not really great options.
Next listener would like to know, they want you to tell them the advantages and disadvantages of trellis fruit trees.
It's a lot of work, and you reduce your crop load a bit, but if you're lacking room, they're great. And I'm assuming they're talking about espalier,
mm-hmm.
which is a French technique, and it's usually done with apples and pears. You can do it with other fruit, but you're training the tree into 2 dimensions where it can go up and sideways, but not out. And so it's not too hard to do, but you want to watch some videos or maybe read a book about it, and then you want to find fruit trees on dwarfing rootstocks so that the trees don't get too angry, because they want to be 30 feet and you're keeping them at 6 feet tall and 8 feet wide. And so it's just something that is ornamental And it was originally done, and this was JD's information, so I don't plagiarize him, but it was originally done around castle moats to where you had a couple of feet of room, but and then you went down into the moat, and they had to keep the fruit trees really narrow. And so they used espalier along the side of the castle to keep their fruit trees narrow because they were utilizing every square inch they could to grow food.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, my question is, so you see... Last year was probably the first year that I saw like Home Depot carrying big containers with these trees. And but my question is, I mean, I'm glad that someone's doing that. So those of us who aren't sure we could figure that out could do it. But then how do you maintain those?
So you what you will do is you would take that home and get it off the little wooden trellis because that's not going to hold for more than a year or two.
Okay.
And get
but
it.
I like the wooden trellis.
Yeah. And so you could do a little bit more durable wooden trellis to fasten it to, but you're going to need to fasten those branches to something more permanent. And the technique is that you prune so that the branches continue growing sideways and maybe up a little bit, but anything going straight up in the air is clipped out.
Oh, but that does that make sense? Oh, because you want them to go sideways?
Yes, and so you let them fill in, but you don't let them get taller than whatever you're growing them on.
Oh, I see.
And even on the lower branches. And so you have, it's similar to what are called grape cordons, if you've ever seen trained grapes. And so you'll have two or three layers, and you run your branches along there, and they can grow up. But not too much. And so you're training them and you need to follow the branch back to figure out where your fruiting wood is. And you need to leave some new wood to develop into fruiting wood. But with the constraints, you don't let them get more than 6 inches or a foot taller than whatever you're growing them on.
It's a lot of science for me.
It's once you figure it out, it's just one of those things that... It does take a little bit of training and trial and error, but once you get it, it's pretty simple.
All right. Can you keep it in the container that it comes in, or
no.
is that going to have to be changed?
It's going to have to be planted in the ground or in a much larger container.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to have to rethink my thoughts on that. I thought, oh, I have a perfect place for this, but now I'm like, I don't know. That's a lot of work.
You know, I was talking to JD and Mike last week. And about annuals and perennials and different things, we got on the topic of vines for trellising, and people will oftentimes bring their patio plants into a greenhouse, and it sometimes is a ticking time bomb because you're introducing aphids and spider mites. And
you're talking like bougainvillea.
Yes,
stuff that
yes.
we don't normally grow.
Tropical
in the
passion
winter.
Flower and things.
Love them all.
But we were also talking about how heavy sometimes vines can get, and what's the happy medium if you can grow them. And the wisterias came up, and American blue moon, the wisteria, American wisteria, some of the annual vines, moonflower, the morning glories. But you know, there's not a lot of transition there of you know, what options you have for those trellises, and you sometimes need to get a little bit creative.
It sounds like it's better to buy a new plant every year too.
If you're doing patio plants, that I would strongly consider buying new plants unless you can totally quarantine them for 2 months away from everything else.
All right.
In a greenhouse where it's walled off.
We're going to take a break. Come back after the news. When we come back, we're going to be talking about renewal pruning. So stay with us. Number to call 801-575-8255.